Welcome to the latest edition of the Backstreet Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Squires, and I'm here with my co-host, Michael McKnight. This is episode 12. How are you today, Michael?
I'm good, Danny. Slightly sore neck, but we're not going to go into that. So, more importantly, how are the legs after last weekend's half marathon?
Yeah, pretty good. A couple of days after, racing down in Carlingford, pulled up actually completely fine. Maybe that was like part and parcel with the conditions that we sort of experienced. I think anyone who was down there will know how tough that last 5 miles were of the half. But yeah, with regards to how I feel, all good. It was a really fun race and a beautiful day. But yeah, as I said, just absolutely savage for conditions, yeah.
And you're going to give us a bit of a rundown on the race a little bit later?
Yep, I've got some results for that. And I'll give a bit of a personal rundown of how I thought the race went. And I think it was just a good building block on the way to what I finally decided is going to be, London Marathon. So,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But what else are we sort of talking about today in the episode, Michael?
So to begin with, we're going to look back on North Belfast Harriers and Lagan Valley's European Clubs adventure. And then we'll catch up on some recent results, including the Trafford 10K and the aforementioned Carlingford Half Marathon. I think we'll also talk a little bit about the Worlds and the upcoming Intercounties and Irish Schools Cross Country.
Yeah, really looking forward to the agenda today, especially the World Indoors part. I mean, I've been keenly watching it every day on BBC, and yeah, it's just so interesting to watch indoors and watch the world's best have a crack. I was going to say, before we get too stuck into it, really good feedback on the last episode, Shamie McCann. The
yep.
People love him. He's a man of the people. And I think we're going to have to invoice North Belfast for all of that free recruitment that we did. Yeah.
Well, look, once we get all those results done, Danny, in part two, we've got an opportunity to talk to Grace Carson, who's one of Northern Ireland's finest female runners, who, after a spectacular season last year, has had a really challenging time of late. And we're going to catch up and hear all about what she's been dealing with.
Yeah, really looking forward to that chat and hearing from Grace. I've never actually formally met her, but really looking forward to hearing about her story and what's sort of been going on more recent times. Sort of a more recent story that's been happening as well has been the European Club Championships for the cross country down in Albufeira in Portugal. We had two of our leading clubs down there, so North Belfast as well as the Lagan Valley junior men's team. Do you have a bit of a recap on the results, Michael?
Yeah, so in the men's junior race, Lagan Valley finished ninth. They were led home by Louis Mallon, who finished 13th, which was a really fine run. Jack McCausland, 29th, Charlie Jones, 31st, and Tommy Arthur, 66th. I'm sure the guys were really excited to be there, and I think they did pretty well. And coach Jim McKeown will be, I think, really encouraged by that. Moving on to the men's senior, North Belfast finished 18th out of 31 teams. Finn McNally, 32nd. Matthew Lavery, 54th. Conan McCaughey, 79. And Conal McCambridge, 86th. Now, I watched the race, so there was a live stream. Finn McNally had a really good go at it. And for probably the first half of the race was probably just about in the first 20, but tired a wee bit, but the quality was incredibly high. I think it was a good run. Matthew Lavery, 54th, is a pretty good run. Conan, I later heard, had a really bad fall. They had some little kind of hurdles and jumps. He clipped one, cracked his head and his knee and things, and had to get up. So just did well to get round. I'm sure they've gone there, really enjoyed it, and will probably think we want to do this again. And next time we go back, we'll try and do even better. The trick is going down and finishing in the top two again in the championships, because this is a thing that every, Irish cross country team, when they go to the senior cross country, you want to get into the top two and then get that trip. So it'll be probably even more competitive next year.
Yeah, definitely. And brilliant from the junior team as well. I mean, we're big fans of what Jim's doing down there at Lagan Valley. So yeah. nice to see they get the good result, and yeah, I'm sure they really enjoyed that time down there, as you said. Should we talk a little bit about Carlingford? Maybe I can run you through some results.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah, so it was there was a 10K and half marathon down in wonderful, beautiful Carlingford. That was my second time down there. I think it was to raise money for St. Bridget's special needs school, and the turnout was immense, you know, probably at least 1,000 runners there. Yeah, in the 10K, it was Noel McNally who came first in 33:17. Jack Sinclair from Roadrunners as well, 34:46 for second, and then David McComb, 37:46 for third place. All three were Roadrunners, so clean sweep for them. Hazel Parker was the first female as well, so yeah, looked like a good time for all of those guys. In the half marathon, now, so this was the race that I was in. It was Cameron Grant who came first. Have you ever heard of this fella? He ran 73:09.
No.
Yeah, looked him up on Strava. Not much going on in his Strava. A few, like, you know, maybe does like 20 Ks a week, but I assume he's definitely hiding his training. He's maybe from Scotland initially. And yeah, he just, like, he came flying past me within the first K, and it looked like he was wearing a pair of trail shoes. I sort of thought to myself, oh, like, who's this guy? He was just so strong. And yeah, he ended up winning ahead of Ashley Dixon and Dale Murray, who I believe are both from North Down. And yeah, on the North Down AC as well, they were, you know, there was a lot of those guys from North Down were in the top 10. So a really good showing by them, and yeah, very strong team. I came fifth personally. It was kind of an interesting race for me. I was in fifth for pretty much the whole race. Actually, I sat in sixth for a while. The course was sort of out from Carlingford up into the hills and then along all of these country roads. So you get a pretty decent climb in the first 5K. And then from there, it's probably like, you know, 8 kilometers or about 5 miles of sort of undulating downhills. And then you get to this point where you turn back and sort of start heading back along the coast up the bay. When we turned around at that point, that was, what was it, 8 miles in. Then you just came straight into this intense headwind, and it was just blowing in your face, probably like 25 miles an hour. Super brutal. So yeah, personally, I was really happy with the decision I made. I could hear sixth place coming up behind me. He was another guy from North Down, Matt McParlin, I think his name is. I could hear him coming up behind me, and I sort of thought, you know, do I, you know, try and fend him off and battle myself for the next 5 miles? And eventually maybe blow up and he comes past me anyways, or do I just let him get ahead of me a little bit, tuck him behind, and then just sit behind him until we get a bit closer to the finish? So I did that, and boy oh boy, I've got to give kudos to him because he was so strong. Like, he just took all of the wind. I said to him at one point, I was like, mate, let's work together, see if we can catch fourth. And he just kept taking the wind the whole time, like wouldn't even let me get a look in on sort of cycling through. But yeah, unfortunately, I think, you know, about a maybe a mile or about a kilometer from the finish, he'd done a lot of work, and I was able to just sort of come around the outside, put a gap on, and then yeah, I just pushed away for fifth place, just behind just behind Drew Fowler from Ballydrane. So look, really fun race, really tough. I think a lot of people probably in the half at least. The guys around me, they sort of said that they ran about 2 minutes slower than what they expected. So yeah, not great from like a times sort of aspect, but I think good from a racing perspective. So
Yeah,
yeah, that's
sounds like
my,
it. And I feel really sorry for the guy who finished sixth though.
I said to him after, I came off and I said, look, mate, you are so strong. That was really well done. Thank you so much for the tow. But like, you know, yeah, I did say to him, you know, let's take turns to try and catch fourth. And every time I sort of tried to come around to sort of maybe do a bit of work on the front, he was just running next to me. So I wasn't really sure, like, you know, oh, well, if you don't want to sit in behind, then I'll just sit behind you and you can do it.
See,
So.
Danny, it's just another example of the marvelous Irish hospitality which you've gotten used to since you've come to live here.
I know, I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled. I tell you what. I was definitely spoiled that last 5 miles because I was able to just, yeah, sort of sit in and Yeah, but yeah, kudos to anyone who finished that race, and either ran a PB or just yeah got to the end, because that last 5 miles was brutal.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, Caitlin Harvey, tempo first female, so pretty stock standard from Caitlin. She asked not to be mentioned on the pod, so yeah,
Okay.
I won't mention her. Moving on from Carlingford, Trafford 10K. Tell us about a bit about that, Michael.
Okay, so that was on Sunday morning, and there was a bit of local interest as several runners had gone across as part of the Northern Ireland and Ulster Endurance Squad, which is run by Mark Kirk. So Chris Fielding, who's normally City of Derry, but he's based in England and runs for Seal Harriers, he produced an absolutely stunning run, 30:02. It was a very, very strong field. So, the guys were certainly down in the 20s, 30s kinds of things, but that shouldn't detract from, really good performances. So that's a big PB for Chris, who's a really, really good track and good road runner. Neil Johnston, 30:15. Neil will probably be happy enough with that. I personally feel that Neil is a sub 30 guy waiting to happen. And if you look at his other performances, it's only really a matter of time. Conan McCaughey, who we mentioned, in relation to the European clubs, recovered obviously from his tumble. He produced a lifetime best of 30:24, super run. A couple of other notable performances from athletes who are not part of the program but were obviously running. Caher Purvis, who we mention almost every week, he got a big PB of 31 flat. But I think the run probably of the weekend came from City of Derry's Declan Reid, who's age 50. Declan ran 31:23 and eclipsed the Irish record, which had been held for years by the great Jim McNamara of 31:45. So for a 50-year-old to run 31:23 is absolutely astounding. So well done, Decky.
That is absolutely astounding. That's got to be run of the race, I reckon. That makes me feel sick. Oh, no, amazing. Well, World Indoors over in Glasgow, very close to Belfast when you look at it on the map. What was your highlight from the race? Or the races, sorry.
Well, my highlight was the men's 1500 last night and Geordie Beamish. So there's a bit of a joke in the Wasteland Track Club. We've kind of unofficially adopted the Kiwi steeplechaser stroke miler because he has a little tash. He has that kind of mullet going on. He likes his coffee. He would just fit in to the Wasteland group if he were here. But I watched him in the heat, and he ran a really controlled, really smart race, and just sneaked in 3:39. And last night in the commentary, nobody was talking about him. They were talking about the Americans and one of the Ethiopians.
Rhaegar,
Yeah,
yeah.
and also Nordas, who would have probably been the favorite, the Norwegian guy. And George Beamish just ran the same kind of race, stayed out of trouble. And even going into the last lap, he was maybe seventh, eighth, but he produced this amazing kick finish and looked really surprised to have won it. He looked like the most shocked guy in the place. But I just love those are the, that's why we watch running. When you get a really exciting race and you get somebody just coming from left field and just, killing it. So that was super.
Yeah, I reckon that was Race of the Championships for me as well. 3:36. That last 100 from Beamish was 12:78.
Whoa.
That's really savage. And yeah, as you said, that he went from 8th place to first in 200 meters. He beats Hobbs Kessler and Cole Hocker. And there's a bit of a joke as well, I think, on the Coffee Club podcast. That's textbook George. He always does this big sprint finish. With regards to a few of the other distance races at Glasgow, I mean, Josh Kerr versus Nagus versus the Kenyan athletes. Well, it was actually Barega was in the 3,000 meters with
Yeah.
Wale. He wasn't in the 1500, sorry. That was fantastic by Josh. I reckon, he's the real deal. I was
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
not convinced until I saw that finish, and then that just how he did that was spectacular.
Yeah, I think what for me, has really stood out over the last, since he won the World Championships, there was a sense that some people were thinking, oh, Jakob is a bit off it. Whiteman's not there, blah de blah. This guy's been a really good athlete for a while. He now seems to be backing up the talent with a real iron will and belief. And he was not going to be denied on that race. The 8 minute 2 mile world record at the Millrose game is sensational running. And also earlier in the season, he ran an incredibly fast half marathon, admittedly downhill, but it just shows the guy's really, really strong. And it's interesting because he's really got under the skin of Jakob, who's now doing a lot of trash talking, and Kerr is just kind of doing his thing and just saying, yeah, bring it on. So that's going to be really, that's it's kind of set up for an amazing Olympic 1500.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Jakob wear a blindfold in the Olympic final. It's gonna be great. A few other notable performances from the Glasgow, yeah, world champs there. I mean, Elle St-Pierre, she won the women's 3K, the American, less than 12 months after giving birth, so I thought that was worth mentioning.
Absolutely.
Laura Muir looked absolutely spent when she crossed the line of that 3K. I think she came like fifth or sixth. Maybe wasn't the Laura Muir that we've known from past races. For Wayne Hailu, she was first in the women's 1500, and second was the Americans Nikki Hiltz, and third was Emily Mackay. Really interesting watching the indoors. I was very interested to see the Afghanistan runner in the men's 3000 meter who got lapped not once but twice. Looked up his PBs on Let's Run, so he ran the 3000 meters in Glasgow in like 9 minutes 37 or something. That was just behind his 3000 meter PB of 9 minutes 30, his 10,000 meter PB of 34:39. I mean, is this like, I assume that this was some sort of like charity place to promote inclusivity and that sort of thing internationally, as it is a world athletics event. But what is really the point of putting someone in there who's 2 minutes slower than the people who are
I thought
winning
it
the race?
was ridiculous, and I actually thought he was a hazard in the race. You want athletes to have a chance to develop, but at a level which is appropriate to their needs and capabilities, and he was really not in the right place. And it makes a mockery of other really good athletes, who didn't actually get a chance to run in that championship when you just basically, drop somebody into the race who really doesn't have the pace or the experience. I mean, he didn't step out when he was getting lapped. And I think he got lapped several times, obviously. So it just seemed to be a nuts decision.
Yeah,
So, World
but
Athletics, if you're listening, don't do it again.
no. I mean, I like what they're trying to do, but at the same time, it's just a hazard, as you said, especially on the 200 meter track. The speed these guys are going, there was already enough push and shove, I think, and yeah, it just didn't help that there was someone. Hogan Lane won. Couple of other results here. Just wanted to mention. I just wrote these in. Tokyo Marathon happened. I think it was sort of widely speculated that Kipchoge was going there. Maybe he'd be able to get the win. He actually came 10th. Safwan Hassan came 4th. It was It was Kenya's Benson Kipruto and Situme Osefa-Kabede, who she's from Ethiopia. They basically won Tokyo Marathon, and that was a Japanese all-comers record of 202 for the men's race and 215.55. So yeah, just is this the beginning of the end for Kipchoge? Is he just gonna keep placing, further and further down the line, or who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he's had an incredible run, but athletes can't go on forever. And there does come a time, and I think it's a bit like the boxer, who's the world championship. You always think you've another fight, and maybe you're the last person to know.
Oh well, hopefully he's still got a knockout punch left for Paris, because I'd love to see it. It would be a dream ending for his career. Not that it would be the end of his career, but I imagine it's a race that he definitely wants to win. So, just quickly as well on Tokyo Marathon, I only know of these two people that are locals, Neil Weir and Steve Austin. They were both over there, and they both got their sixth star in the World Marathon Majors. I think if you do all six, you get a special medal. So congratulations to both of those fellas who got their last Last point on the star for the World Marathon Majors, and impressively, Neil Weir did all six under 2 hours 40. So,
Wow.
not a bad little, cherry on the top there.
Absolutely. So, Danny, just quickly, one just last thing to mention. This weekend, we have some important competitions for local athletes. We have the UK Intercounties Cross Country at Wollaton Hall in Nottingham. And we have a Northern Ireland Ulster ladies team and a men's team going over. So the women's team isn't a particularly strong team for a variety of reasons. It's led by Robin McKee. But what's really important is there's several athletes who are getting their first call up to the team. So really exciting opportunity for them. So as well as Robin, we've got Joanne Mills, I think won the intermediate, Kate Mulholland of St. Peter's, Jennifer Martin of Tafelta, Natalie Hall of Striders, and Sarah Lavery of Beachmount. So good luck to the ladies. The men's team is a very strong team. It's got three Striders, three North Belfast, and a North Down athlete. So we have Finn McNally, Conan McCaughey, and Conal McCambridge from North, Iskander Turkey, Neil Johnson, and debutant Luke Dinsmore from Striders, and Craig McMeekin. Now, 2 years ago, the men's team finished runners up, and I think they'll challenge again for a podium spot. And if everybody runs really, really well, I think they've got a shot at a gold medal. So, looking forward to that. The other thing that's on is the Irish Schools, I think, is on this weekend. And we'll have a number of our up and coming schoolboy and schoolgirl athletes. So, obviously, Anna Gardner is one to look out for, who'll be going in the senior girls. Finn Diver, his sister Ava Diver. So there's a lot of excitement and brewing. Now, I'm saying this weekend. I think it's this weekend. Hopefully I'm not wrong and it's not the following weekend. But the Irish schools will be coming up in between when we post this podcast and the next one. So we'll hopefully report on that. So I think that's all the news for now, Danny.
Excellent. Yeah, just one more race that's coming up. I think there's a fair few athletes heading down to Bohemian Half Marathon this coming Saturday. So, interesting. Hopefully, we can recap a few of those results. I think, yeah, from the results aspect of this episode, I think we're pretty much done. So, maybe we'll just end the episode this week with the interview with Grace Carson, and we'll sign off here. And yeah, everyone can stay tuned for the second part where we chat to Grace. So yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and hooroo. So welcome everyone to part two of the Backstreet Podcast. We've now been joined by Grace Carson. Thank you so much for joining us, Grace. How are you this evening?
I'm not too bad. I'm a bit nervous, but hopefully I'll not waffle too much. So yeah.
Don't be nervous. We won't bite.
So, Grace, nice to see you again. So, for anybody who doesn't know you, and how can anybody who's involved in local running not know you? But you're a Cookstown girl, and alongside Nick Griggs, you've really helped to put Mid Ulster running on the map in recent years. So, just to begin, can you set the scene and tell us a little bit about the running journey that took you from Cookstown to Loughborough, and I think now Birmingham?
You're correct. So I kind of whenever so I'd got into kind of running at school, and I joined the cross country team there, and I kind of knew I wanted to progress then. I wanted to go to university. And at the time, like a lot of probably athletes, when they're making that decision about where to go to uni, I had been approached by American unis and things like that, but I think I knew deep down that America wasn't right for me. I do love home, even though I have been away for almost 5 years. I miss home a lot, and I knew that probably America was just too far. So Loughborough, because of the course itself, it was kind of known for being a good course for sport and exercise science, but also because it was a good uni for sport, I thought, well, I'll at least apply and see what happens. And yeah, that it fell into place. And my mum, she did not want me to go, not for selfish reasons, but just the thought of me being not just 5 minutes away, but essentially you have to fly over to visit me. She thought that was just like the other side of the world. But I felt it was right, and They all supported me in that decision. So I moved to Loughborough to study. I was there for 4 years, and did my undergrad there. And then, yeah, I suppose I kind of knew that I think my friends there were starting to move on, and I kind of felt that I had was ready to move on to the next stage as well. And Loughborough, as much as I love it and it will always have a close place in my heart, I just felt I needed a new step. So I applied for a job, and again, I've always kind of been like, if it's meant to be, it will work out. And that job was in Birmingham. I knew there was a good setup there as well with the uni. And now I'm in Birmingham.
Grace, for people who maybe don't know, Loughborough has for, I guess, maybe the last 40 years been one of the epicenters in the UK of high performance middle distance running. Going back to the days of George Gandy and continuing right to the present. Jack Buckner, who's now the top dog in UK athletics, was at Loughborough when I was at Birmingham. And the year I made the team at Busiff, when Loughborough beat us, just Jack Buckner won the race, so they're always were my kind of bête noir. But can you speak a wee bit to the experience of trying to be an athlete at Loughborough and the high standards and everything that you encounter there?
Yeah, I think because you are surrounded, like Loughborough, it is a bubble, they call it. You do live in almost like a bubble where you're surrounded by people who are at the top of their game in sport, not only in athletics, but across all sports. And I think you do feel so inspired. Whereas at home, maybe training 6 days a week, people think you're mad and you're doing double days or thing, they think, oh, why are you doing that for? That's just part of the culture at Loughborough. So you do just kind of get swept up in it. And it is as well, I think, like a real family feel as well, where everyone is really supportive, and is kind of willing you on. So yeah, it's a really inspiring place. And I'm so glad I kind of decided to go there in the end, because it's been a big part of my athletics journey so far.
What did you study there, Grace?
I'll give you one guess, because it's
exercise science, maybe?
yeah,
Yeah.
spot on.
Do they
I'm so
offer any other
original.
courses at Loughborough, or that's it?
Yeah, they offer sport and exercise science, sport and exercise science. No, they do a lot of the chemical engineering. I think like engineering's a big core, or a big kind of thing as well. But yeah, sport and exercise science is big.
And follow-up question, what are the facilities like there? I think I saw a photo on your Instagram where you were hooked up
Yeah.
to some sort of mask and, can you just get a lactate test done every other week or how does it work?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, we would have had testing like twice a year. So kind of before cross season and then before track season. Just because I think that's really all we kind of needed. Whenever you're training and you're in competitions, it's hard sometimes to fit that around it. So we would have typically had that. But yeah, the facilities is amazing. I'm not sure if you've saw kind of the gym and that side of things there. But yeah, even the HYPACK, so the High Performance Athletic Centre, they've got like the purple indoor track. And yeah, it's pretty good facilities to train at.
Sounds dreamy.
Yeah.
And Grace, as an up and coming runner, who were the athletes that you looked to draw inspiration?
Yeah, I think like for me, Paula Radcliffe will always be kind of that. She's been one of those athletes that I've always looked up to, and I just yeah, I think so. I did get to meet her, because she knows my coach Bill Foster quite well.
And of course, the Loughborough connection.
Yeah, and the Loughborough connection, and even just I think meeting her and seeing that at the end of the day, she's just a really actually genuinely lovely person as well. It's sometimes I think you're scared of meeting those people that you look up to in case they don't live up to the kind of image that you've perceived in your head. But she was definitely one of those athletes. But then I think the likes of Jess Judd, as well, has obviously achieved so much already and is still competing at an incredibly high level. And she would have been, there training, not with our group, but she would have, always made a point of saying hello and things like that. So yeah, those were probably athletes that I looked up to. And obviously the Loughborough connection then makes it all the more real that that could be possible one day for you as well.
Yeah, that's yeah, I absolutely get that.
Yeah.
Did sort of being in this high sort of performance environment, do you feel that that sort of helped you progress massively? What did that do for your running?
I think it does. It really, you're training with really great girls who are running really well, and that can only push you on because, you've got the support of them. You want to push each other on. You're all working towards the same goal. So it definitely did. And I've always enjoyed that kind of social aspect as well of, yeah, having sessions with people because I think, yeah, it makes the hard sessions a lot more enjoyable.
You sort of yeah, you had a pretty outstanding season last year. You won the Intercounties cross country title, the NI senior cross country, and all of that sort of followed on from a fifth in the European under 23s. Tell us about it. What happened there? Did it all just click and all came together?
Yeah, I think it's hard to know because there was nothing dramatically that changed. I think it potentially was as well. I didn't have, because at whilst I really enjoyed Loughborough and I really enjoyed my time there, I did think it was time, as I say, I felt like it was time to move on. And I think that kind of becoming then, I made this choice where I was really going to focus on my athletics, whilst also working part-time, kind of, or working full-time at that time. But I was really going to make that kind of, I suppose, next step to really try and, I suppose, see where I could get in sport and in athletics and cross country. So yeah, nothing significantly changed with my training. I still kept the same coach. But I think it was as well just a different environment. I needed a change, and that's kind of not necessarily a change in my training, but just a change.
Yeah, and the Intercounties, I think it's worth pointing out. I was the team manager for the men 2 years ago, and athletes here don't have any sense of what a big deal alongside the English national that's right at the pinnacle of British cross country running. And that was it Loughborough last year at Prestwell,
Yeah,
was it?
it was.
So big race, big win.
It was a really, I mean, that was just kind of like, I think because my cross season had went to plan, and I think it was just kind of the last like cherry on the top where it would kind of just solidify the performances that I had put in that season. And I think it was all the more special that, so my dad had tried to come out to watch me at the Europeans, and I don't know if you, I mean, at that time, I'm not sure if you remember, there was really bad frost, and a lot of the, even I think the Irish team had a lot of difficulty actually
That's
getting
right,
to Turin,
yeah.
but his flight got cancelled,
Oh.
and so he didn't actually get out to watch me, and although it was disappointing at the time, I think everything happens for a reason, and that probably made then that moment because he was able to get over to Loughborough and actually watch me race and then go on to win the Intercounties. But I think that moment was just really special as well, having him there and being able to kind of, because being an athlete, it's not just you. You have, I would not be where I'm at without the support of all the people who are behind me. So I think when you see an athlete stand on that line, normally it's an whole army behind them that's got them to where they are.
And I know actually we read there was an interview that Danny and I had read online, and you know we're aware that you lost your mum several years ago. So,
Yeah.
you know, there's always that. I'm sure those big moments are very bittersweet in a sense.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I lost my mum and a few years now, and that was an incredibly difficult time. But I think that has almost given me more kind of fire in my belly that I'm not just doing it for myself, but all those people behind me, and most of all her, because yeah, she was one of those mums that was proud if I'd come last, proud if I came first, but she'd have been ringing the village to have let them know definitely on that day that I'd won.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. And yeah, I sort of, looking on Power of 10, it seems like not only was the beginning of 2023 a real high point, I imagine you have a lot of some of your race highlights of your life from early 2023, but it seems like a lot of your PBs all sort of came from 2022.
I think it was kind of, I suppose that kind of build up to that. So I knew I was kind of every year I'd kind of just been chipping away slowly, and just kind of knocking seconds off bit by bit. So there was not really, my coach has always kind of been a very taken a very kind of considered and careful approach, to kind of just build things up gradually. So that's always been just part of the plan, just to gradually keep chipping away, and yeah, that kind of was then led into the 2023 season.
So Grace, I'm going to take you that sort of from those highs to where we are now. So this season, 23 into 24, has been really, really challenging for you. And you've been, very open and honest about the things you've encountered. So just talk us through, what are the issues and what's happened.
Yeah, so again, I'm just going to put a disclaimer out there that I am by no means an expert, and I'm still very much trying to like find my way through it all. But I think it all started probably in summer, I would say 2023 summertime. And again, you can look up my Power 10s because my races, the times just weren't clicking. And I think I knew deep down that something didn't feel quite right. Like, as athletes, I think we know our bodies quite well. And I didn't feel like, yeah, races just weren't coming together. But me and my coach kind of put it down till maybe it's just trying to balance too many different things. And maybe we just need to call the season where it's at and build up for the cross season. And so we did that. And I started building back up gradually. I was feeling really good and excited kind of to race, and hopefully kind of be able to show that I was back to where I wanted to be. But my first and only cross country season races season kind of didn't end that way. And it didn't go as planned. And I think it was kind of the final straw, to me and my coach, and also, yeah, just to my family as well, because it was quite scary, and it kind of just proved that something really wasn't right, that my body just did not, it wasn't in a good place. And so I remember having that chat with my coach, and he was like, look, I think we really need to just take a step back from competition training until we get you healthy, because obviously something's just not right. And I knew deep down as well that that what he was saying, he had a point, because I was technically just flogging a dead horse at this stage. So at that time, after that race as well, Mark Kirk, he was kind of, because things travel fast in the sport world, and he had heard about kind of the race, and so he then messaged me, and I kind of had just told him things weren't feeling quite right. So he got me in touch with the sport doctor, Alan Rankin at Sport NI. And I've been seeing him since. But yeah, I was essentially diagnosed with the condition RED S, which for those who don't know, stands for relative energy deficiency, in sport. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm going through at the minute.
What do they sort of mean with regards to, what does that diagnosis mean with regards to, relative energy deficiency? Is it, how do you sort of feel day to day, or is it not a day to day thing? It's just when you're trying to sort of get stuck into training a bit more.
Yeah, I think that's what's been hard, because I think day to day I function, I function fine, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint it in one particular thing. And I think when I was going to my GP, that I'd been seeing previously, they obviously were taking bloods and markers and comparing them compared to the just the average population. Whereas for athletes, we need probably a lot of those markers to be considerably higher compared to the general population. So it wasn't seen as a problem. They just kind of were like, oh, you're maybe a bit overtrained, just cut back the training. And obviously for an athlete, just to say that with no valid kind of reasoning behind it doesn't really add up. So I was kind of reluctant at that stage. But what my understanding of it now is basically where it's kind of been in a prolonged energy deficit for a period of time, which means that the energy that should be prioritized or should be given kind of divided up to all the physiological functions within your body. So, yeah, everything essentially, it just gets prioritized solely to movement, and whatever is left over, then that can, I suppose, be drip fed to those other functions. If that makes sense.
So is it sort of limiting the function of other organs in the body and other, I guess, natural things that should typically happen? And
Exactly that.
would I'm kind of curious, you sort of mentioned that I guess during the summer you started to feel that you were having issues and you sort of knew deep down that maybe something wasn't quite right. Was there something that you'd done in the lead up to feeling that way that maybe put you in this energy deficit, or was it just something that can happen by overtraining or training a lot?
Yeah, I think I've always, as again, whenever I put this like post out, I was a bit reluctant because previously, when I was younger, which is the case with a lot of Reddit stories, you'll hear athletes say that they had an eating disorder when they were kind of younger or in their past, or it was brought on by an eating disorder. And that as well was something I struggled with when I was a teenager. But I was definitely not in that place that I was. And so I kind of couldn't put my finger on it, as essentially, like I thought, well, I feel like I'm feeling right. Why? In my head, I think I knew it could be that, simply because, and I'll kind of go on to talk about this a bit more, but my menstrual cycle, it hadn't been regular and things like that. There was a lot of things that probably would have pointed to that, but sometimes when you don't want to see the signs and you kind of just put your head in the sand, and that was very much kind of the stage I was at, because I think as well I was scared of knowing I might have to then really take a step back from the sport, and that was really scary, that even the thought of that, because yeah, I wanted to do what I love doing, and that's sometimes hard.
Yeah, Grace, just as you're speaking, there's something that occurs to me, and it is a bit of a truism, but it's because the evidence would be that it is a something that goes on, that you were running at a very high level, and when athletes are running at that level, you've got to work really, really hard, and there always seems to me to be a like almost a razor's edge that you're traveling along. You've got to push to get to the level, but if you push too hard, you can tip over and there's injury, and it's and there's no right or wrong way. And again, you talked about eating disorders a younger person, and again, there's a lot of issues in the past, lots of athletes, both male and female, who have encountered that because of just of the nature of our sport. It is, I think, it's such a challenging sport, and the faster you run and the higher level you compete at, it certainly doesn't get any easier. So I don't know if there's any comfort in that, but
That's so true. And I think it is a condition, and it's something that affects, because I think the personality traits as well that kind of carry over from being a professional athlete or being a kind of top level athlete. You've got to be driven, you've got to be determined. Those things are very closely linked, often the type A personality that's associated with people who do have deep, often develop eating disorders. And so there is kind of a very fine line between someone who's really driven and motivated, but then tipping into kind of that Red S then. So it is a really complex, a complex kind of world that sport is. But I think, yeah, that's where it kind of can be quite grey as well.
What are some of the red flags that maybe you experienced yourself and you would encourage people to look out for? I mean, obviously it's very personal and going on from there, now that you have this diagnosis, how are you feeling now and what does the road back towards where you were previously look like?
Yeah, so I think to answer your first question there, with kind of the things that, like, with the things to kind of that I looked out or that I suppose drew me to getting help, it wasn't your conventional, because I think a lot of us associate stress fractures. That's normally kind of bone health, and touch wood, thankfully, I've never had a stress fracture. So that wasn't kind of, that wasn't the reason why I seeked help. It was because of a lot of other things that aren't really talked about. And again, I mentioned there about the menstrual cycle, that's well known. And that my menstrual cycle had been, yeah, like that for a long, long time. So it was even before kind of that summer. But other things as well started to kind of become apparent, in that my strength, like whenever I'd be doing weight training, not that we have to be lifting really heavy, but I wasn't as strong, or didn't seem to be getting any stronger. I also felt like my, towards the end of reps, I would definitely, like, that those glycogen stores would be depleted a lot quicker, and I'd feel like I really struggled towards the end of a session, which would then also become apparent at the end of races. As well, like at really high intensity efforts, effort, which again, I didn't know that this was something associated with, but like I would, and forgive me if this is TMI, but I feel like this is also important because I know I won't be the only one, but like I would just lose all feel like bladder control. And again, I was thinking, I mean, I've not had children. I'm not a 50-year-old woman yet. Like, you hear of this often, yeah, when people have, women have had children. But again, that was something else that's very common, and since seeing different kind of experts in the field have learned that that's common. So those things all kind of started to link into the jigsaw puzzle, and eventually led to me kind of, I've led to my diagnosis. But I think then, in answer to your second question, I think I have had to really kind of, I suppose, think about these next few months, or even whenever I put out a post a couple of weeks, or just, yeah, last week, about what's been going on. And this has obviously been going on for, that's really for a while, but I didn't want to say anything, because I probably fully hadn't processed it in my head, and I felt like I really needed to be in a place where I felt comfortable that I could talk about it before I was able to kind of say openly, this is what's going on. But after a while, I kind of was sick of just bluffing it off, or when someone would ask me, oh, so what competitions are coming up? I was kind of sick of being quiet about it. And I thought, well, why am I being quiet about it? At the end of the day, people are going to think what they want to think. They can give me a label if they want, but at the end of the day, that's what, I can't control that. So that's what led me to put that post out, maybe for selfish reasons, but also I thought, if I, anything, if I can help one other person who's listening to this, or if they can get anything from what I'm saying, then yeah, by simply putting something out there might help.
I think it
So
was incredibly brave, just for the record. It was really,
thank
really
you.
good. I think you're doing it for all the right reasons. So.
Thank you very much. So I think these next few months are really about, we kind of looked at it, about getting me healthy. So I suppose training for health first, because training's always got to have a purpose. And that's why I was kind of, whenever I had to take a step back, that's been really hard, because your whole week is structured around, session on Tuesday, session on Saturday, tempo on Thursday, and then that's all stripped away, and you've suddenly got to kind of, I suppose, you're left with okay, well, what do I do now? Who am I?
Mm.
You lose your identity as well. And so I've really had to try and start to, I suppose, sit with that uncomfortable feeling and then actively kind of try to build me back to being the person and hopefully athlete I was and can be again.
Reyes, can I just pick up on something you said? As a female athlete, do you feel now in the sport that it's a safe, supportive place to discuss some of these issues, which are very particular in some regards to female athletes? I'm kind of looking back in the sport and thinking, up until fairly recently, my sense is that the athletics fraternity really didn't want to talk about some of these issues. I mean, even menstruation, was something that wasn't discussed, and it has to be to the good that we have now more transparency and, we can talk about these things.
Yeah, completely. And I think we are starting to kind of change that conversation, and that's been really, really important. But obviously, like anything, it does take time, and it takes time to feed through from high level to club level. And I think as well, because of a lot of coaches, often there's more male coaches than female, so sometimes it might be more difficult for male coaches to feel like they can bring up those conversations with their female athletes. But I think it's trying to take away that awkwardness, which is easier said than done, but it's a normal physiological function. We all know it affects females. We all know it's normal for a female to have. So I think we need to strip back that awkwardness and that awkwardness with kind of discussing a really important part of being a woman.
Yeah, I'm very aware as a coach that I don't think there's enough female coaches. And, it's starting to change. But I can remember in the past getting the sense that sometimes when blokes were coaching female athletes, that it was almost as if coach them like they're a small man. And that, really flies in the face of common sense and actually due diligence in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, and I think that's also, I used to not see kind of that there's a reason why the female body and like males don't race with females, or that like females are built very differently to males. So they're obviously going to be, they're not going to respond to training that males are doing in the same way that males will respond to that same training. And I think it is, again, it goes back to even the research that is always, it's normally always been done in university male like athletes. There's very few studies still that are carried out on females, so there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But I think that's why I feel like really passionate about, actually, we need to kind of, I suppose there's power in number, and the more athletes, the more female athletes especially, that are willing to kind of take their stand and vocalize these problems, then hopefully we can start to help change that.
Yeah, so it's very powerful words, and I think, just sitting here, I'm sure Danny agrees that not only are you a champion in terms of actually race performance and everything else, I think you're a bit of a champion here as well. I mean, I think you've been amazingly brave and really articulate and talking about something that's really important.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Yeah, I probably waffle a lot too, but thank you.
No, it's been fantastic to hear from you today. And yeah, we've really enjoyed catching up, and really thank you for coming on. And I guess, did you have any final suggestions for anyone who's maybe feeling that they maybe are in a similar situation to yourself?
Yeah, I think it can be easy to stay quiet and think, well, this isn't really affecting me that badly. I'll just carry on. And it can be easy to put your head in the sand. But from someone who did that and did it for a bit too long, I would say that speak to someone. And again, if they don't know where to signpost you to, or they don't have the answers, don't just kind of shut that down. Persevere, because you ultimately often know your body best. And if you feel that there's something not right, then you're probably right. There's something that's not right. So persevere. and yeah, focus on being healthy.
Well said, Grace. Yeah, we can't wait to see you back, but in the meantime, we wish you all the best with, the recovery and getting healthy again. And yeah, hopefully we can catch up with you again soon.
I hope so. Thank you very much.